Welcome to Talk About Talk with Shanti Niven and Desiree Luthi. Shanti and Desiree are professional speakers and trainers of world-class speakers and anyone who wants to improve their oral communication skills and their lives. Listen in as they share their captivating speaker secrets over morning coffee. Tune in weekdays from 7:30 to 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And don't forget to follow the show or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, everybody. Starting a little late out of Los Angeles on this Martin Luther King Day, which I've never celebrated before coming here. Is this a holiday that you have celebrated all your life? Or?
I've never celebrated it except for it was a holiday we took off school. That's the only thing I ever...
Well, that would be a reason to celebrate
that's
March.
That's the only thing, it was a holiday that we took off. And I understand why we celebrate it, and it's something to observe and recognize, absolutely. But it's never, growing up, it was never something on my side that was big for us to celebrate. Because next month, for when I was growing up, next month, February, is Black History Month. And that's when we really started getting into the history of slavery and everything that went on here in America. And I guess, well, all over the world. And that's really where our focus was. And that's where Martin Luther King came into the picture a lot for me when I was growing up.
Well, of course, I know how important Martin Luther King was in the history of this country and people like him across the world. But I was just wondering, and maybe if there's a listener listening in who does know the answer to this, what do Americans traditionally do to celebrate? Is this celebrated or observed? If you observe it, how would you do so? I believe a lot of people are going to church at different parts of the country. Hmm. That was one thing that I had heard last night. I watched on television, in fact, how politicians actually went to the place where he gave his last sermon. So it'd be interesting to know how people recognize Martin Luther King. And
that is interesting. I would love to be more involved in the observation of those kind of things, because in any holiday, I don't think I've ever observed any holiday, President's Day, any special holiday that we get off, I don't think I've ever observed anything. I think it's just a holiday. When you're a kid growing up, you just think of it as a day off from school. You don't consider what the reason is.
That might be your family kind of thing, because you know, when you said, well, you didn't celebrate Martin Luther King Day, I thought to myself, well, that's funny. Getting a day off school for us was always a reason for celebration. So,
but I think that that's exciting to celebrate, but I don't think I reflected on the reason we were celebrating the holidays.
Really do the same for Christmas? And
that's what I'm saying. I don't think we do it for any holiday. And I know my kids at some of the schools we're at, like right now, they know Monday is no school. So that's there in their celebration in their mind. Monday is no school. I get a day off to sleep in or play games.
And do parents stay off work?
No. Not I'm sure some do, but I know
if they're working as
teachers. My parents didn't. They went to work and they had people come and stay. We had nannies.
Okay. That must be actually quite a pain. In that I'm thinking about it. They take time off school, but then they don't do it for work. So why is it a holiday then?
No. Banks take it off as well. It just depends on the company.
Because then I don't know. Yeah, that'd be interesting. So anybody can answer this question for me. How do Americans celebrate Martin Luther King Day? Is it a day taken off work? I know a lot of people are taking off work today that have said they are taking off work for whatever reason, but we're also in the teaching profession, so obviously we're taking off work today. Well, are we really? No.
Are we really?
But, I mean, we're not actually teaching today. So anyway, today we're going to be talking about, once again, on a theme, probably... The next week will be the last time because I'm going to do something really unusual on air next week. But this week, we're going to be talking about, once again, a very big subject, and that is the fear of public speaking or any sort of anxiety and fear, because anything we're discussing around public speaking can be applied to anything else. So if you have performance stress of any kind, whether it be performance on the job, sports performance, whatever it is, these tips will work for you. Just happens to be that public speaking, communication is our field, and it's an area that a lot of people seem to really struggle with. I mean, they were saying that something like 79% of the population have a debilitating fear. Debilitating. I mean, that's kind of interesting. Not just a fear, it's debilitating, so it's actually holding people back.
And we've seen it firsthand from clients with major social anxiety. I believe you mentioned another one of our clients who used to leave his job to avoid speaking, and we see it all the time. And people, that have experience speaking, that are already in the boardroom all the time speaking or in front of large audiences where they just get so nervous up there all of a sudden and freeze completely. So it is something that is very common. And once again, we're continuing our series on how to overcome this fear so you can become a very powerful and captivating speaker as well.
Yep. And I've had my question answered. It is a day of work, a federal holiday.
Oh, cool.
So it's actually a holiday for everybody.
And I don't remember taking it off.
There we go. But it apparently is a federal holiday, and a lot of people take long weekends. Some people go away. Isn't it funny how there's a holiday to commemorate a particular person, and we take it as a time for us to catch up on household chores and to go on a holiday or vacation. One of those funny things, isn't it? Anyway, okay, so
fun fact, so I must have been taking it off work, but I don't remember taking it off work unless I got paid for holiday pay.
A federal holiday. When a bank takes off, apparently it's normally...
Yeah, but they take off some holidays that the corporates don't take off. That's definitely the case.
Interesting. It may be a corporate-to-corporate sort of thing.
Yeah, it just depends on the culture. Interesting. But then again, when do we really reflect? Like, for example, Labor Day. We have a holiday for Labor Day to celebrate how hard we've worked to get to where we are, so we take a day off. And I don't know if that's ever recognized. I don't know what's happening to your computer there. It keeps saying hello.
I know, this is ridiculous. My CD thing keeps on just popping out for no rhyme or reason. It's demanding to be removed. Okay. All right, here we go. And now the music's going to start. Watch this happen.
Put your sound. Oh,
oh yes, okay. Here we go. Okay. Because I love to listen to music when I'm working on my computer. Okay, this is an interesting study. This is something that's been tested, that was conducted around the globe, is that if you're an introvert, that you act extroverted, you will be happier. Now, that was kind of an interesting one to me. I should have actually noted my sources, because I don't just like to make statements like that, but this is a reputable source. I'll have to go back and check it out and let you know in the show's credit. But because I thought about this, and I thought, you know, there's nothing wrong with being an introvert. I have three kids, and two of those kids would be regarded as introverts. And a lot of my friends are introverts. And the strange thing is that Desiree and I both test as ambiverts, which means that, you know I act extroverted, but quite honestly, in many of my ways, I'm quite an introvert. I don't socialize. I'm not a party girl. I don't, you know, given the choice of going out to a party and staying home, I'm staying home, boy. If given the choice of big social gathering and a small intimate gathering for me anytime. And yet I speak in front of large crowds, and I actually get a lot of energy from doing that. I love that. The more people, the better. So it's a very strange anomaly, really. But on the other hand, it isn't, because I think what I do is I get up there, I pump out all of this energy, and then I need to get some quiet time in order to kind of
regain that strength.
Yeah, and center myself. So, So I do understand what it is like to be an introvert, because I'm sitting on the border there. Am I shy? That's a good question, because somebody said to me, well, you don't feel the shyness and anxiety. Yes, I did once. That's why I got into this field.
Mm.
But what we have been saying in the show is the more that you confront something, in other words, if you're afraid of something, repeated exposure to the thing that you're afraid of will remove the fear. That is the biggest tip we can give you out of all of these shows that we can give you. Just keep on doing it. Keep on doing it. Keep on doing it. Keep on doing it. Feel the fear and do it anyway. Biggest tip.
You know what really helped me, though, as well, because I wouldn't say I was very shy, but I know Shanti and I were very similar in this. It kind of just depended on the group of people I was around. If I felt comfortable, I guess that's with anyone, though. If you feel more comfortable, obviously you start to really get out there, and then I get very talkative, and if people are asking the right questions, then I will go on and on about whatever the topic may be if I'm very interested in that. But one thing I learned, because I also was kind of shy, introverted in some ways, one thing I learned is that as soon as I started watching other people speaking and hearing their incredible stories, it helped me realize that everyone, shocking statements about to come, are human, and they have these incredible stories, and they have their history, and they have so much that they have gone through in their lives, which is so inspiring. And now I'm eager to meet and chat with people because I want to know what that story is for them. What is it that got them to this point in their life? What are they passionate about? Because I love seeing that sparkle in their eyes. And with that, it's helped me become a more social person. So when I go out to networking events, I don't ask the same old, well, what do you do? No, I want to know the person. I want to get into their story and find out why they're in business, that business that they're in, or how they got here in the first place. I mean, Los Angeles, right here in Los Angeles, is such a fantastic place because I rarely meet a local. Rarely. It's such a cluster of different cultures and experiences and life, and it's just so incredible to meet all these people. And I think that helped me become more of an extrovert in so many ways because I want to share those stories. I want to hear all of them, and I want to meet as many people. I crave that learning and understanding of the world around us. And it's really inspired me to want to share those stories that they have if they aren't ready to voice them.
Yeah, I agree. That's one thing I love about Los Angeles as well. And I was thinking Los Angeles.
And you're good at it. You love hearing those stories.
Trader Joe's, and I love Trader Joe's as well. I love the little corner because that's my little social spot.
The coffee tasting.
The little place where I go for the coffee tasting. And I meet people, you know, Trader Joe's. Yesterday I met a German lady.
And German?
German.
German.
Yeah, with a very strong German accent. Not like Daniel, who's lost his accent.
He doesn't have one.
3 years. I don't know how he did that. I mean, it's amazing. People listen to Daniel and they do not know that he was German.
He sounds like he was born and raised in Los Angeles. He actually has even the kind of, not slang because he's very professional with how he is and his voice is very clear, but I would have never in a million years guessed that he is not from here.
That just goes to show how you study it.
But he wanted to get rid of
Daniel,
the accent.
Really good, because I've even noticed he's the only person I know who can put on my accent accurately, and that's scary accurate.
I haven't heard him.
Tom does it jokingly, but he does, again, a caricature version of my accent.
Yeah.
It's very pronounced and over the top.
I have to hear this.
Sounds, you know, I can hear it to my ear. It's funny, but, you know, and Tom's excellent with accents. But he's taking a caricature version of my accent, whereas Daniel slips into my accent every now and again, and he does it perfectly. It's scary. Okay, so the first thing we spoke about is the study about introverts acting extroverts when they feel happier. And, you know, I don't say this is going
against... Wait, did you tell us about the German lady?
Yes, I was just saying about...
That you met her, with a different accent. I thought you were going to tell us a story of, like, she has an amazing story.
That's what I love about
Los
Angeles.
No, it's amazing.
Is that you meet people from everywhere. Nobody can say there are natives here, but, you know, everybody here is from somewhere.
But what is a native, you know? Because even, I guess, technically, I'm a native. My dad was born here, and his parents were born here. So
okay,
I guess...
So you're a native.
Exactly. I guess I'm more of a native.
Half a native.
Technically, I'm half a native, but...
Yeah, because your mom's from Nicaragua, right?
But she's been here. She grew up. She went to Calabasas High School. She moved here when she was 14. She moved here when
she was 14,
yeah.
Because she has a strong accent.
That's what I think. She's been here longer than she was in Nicaragua. She's lived here for twice as long as she was in Nicaragua. She still has the heaviest accent of anyone I've ever met.
Yeah, it's very...
So, but she chooses to.
My
son
loves
it.
It's a very...
She chooses to keep it.
Very sexy.
Yes, he does.
Okay, so it's back to this. Now, I was thinking about this, pondering the statement that why would an introvert feel happier acting extrovert? And I came to this conclusion because this was a study that was done. And I feel, well, first of all, the one division between introverts and extroverts is that introverts, a lot of people think, don't love people. But actually, it's not true. A lot of introverts really do love people. Here's what makes an introvert. An introvert gets their energy from solitude. An extrovert gets their energy from other people and from being in group situations. So introverts can handle being sociable, but they also then need their alone time. And that's perfectly fine. But so what the study, I think, really means is that in a social situation, by acting sociable and putting on being talkative and putting on those extroverted qualities, they start to feel happier within themselves. And then when you project that onto the public speaking scenario, public speaking is considered an extrovert quality or an extroverted activity. Let's put it that way. You would assume that an introvert would not be something that they would gravitate towards. And yet I can point out a number of really good introverted speakers.
Some of the best leaders in the world are introverts by nature.
And a lot of great actors as
well. Actors, yeah.
So this is not a flog an introvert day for sure. All we're saying is that it goes back to what we were saying about acting, and acting becomes the fact. So I think that's a very good hack to remember, is that start to act like an extrovert, and you start to feel those sort of, you start to feel the confidence. And so if you're really battling and you suffer from anxiety, that's a good one to do, is just to act confident. And one of the things that I wanted to remind you of is the Amy Cuddy's body, confident power poses. And now there are two poses that I can suggest that you adopt. The one is what they call the Wonder Woman pose for women. Hands on hips, body wide open, legs apart, head thrown up. And if you can adopt that pose for 2 minutes, they've said if you can hold the pose for 2 minutes, your heart rate will slow down, you will feel stronger and more confident. So you can safely do that without drawing too much attention to yourself. Some of the other power poses are a little obvious. The one for men is hands behind head, elbows up, spread wide open, body spread wide open. The trick is to keep your body, to make your body as big and as open as possible. Because when you're afraid, you want to make your body small, and so you curl up, you tuck your arms in, and you try and make yourself tiny. You tuck your head down. The problem with that is that your body then says there's a threat, and the fear factor gets increased.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And sorry, I wanted to just chime in with the introverts thing, because extroverts could learn a lot from introverts as well. And being an introvert is not a bad thing. It's actually a fantastic quality to have. And the one thing extroverts can learn, and in speaking, this is one of the most important things, is being a great listener. Extroverts are always as seen in the spotlight and really standing out, speaking, getting their energy. But it's one thing that, not lack, because Shanti and I love to listen to people, but they could use a little bit more of is the listening skills. And being a great speaker, you need to be able to listen to your audience, whether it's in their body language or whether it's when you're speaking to them. You need to be able to know what is it that they want so you can become a great and effective speaker. Because once again, if you heard our previous archived episodes, one of the biggest reasons people fear speaking is their fear of judgment. And if you have the audience nailed down, if you know what they want, and you can present it because you're prepared now and you're able to adjust your speaking to help them, it'll only make you more confident because you know it's what they want to hear. And then that'll decrease your fear and anxiety when you're up there speaking. So just a little tip. We didn't want to sound like we're thrashing introverts here. We're absolutely not. We think it's, well, we're both. I mean, we're introverts as well. We're introverts, extroverts. It's a powerful quality to have as well.
If we're thrashing introverts, then we're certainly thrashing ourselves too.
Because yes.
I'm definitely, as I'm getting older, I think we're getting more and more introverts as well. And it's a strange thing because I love people. I genuinely, nobody can say, I really do. I love people. I love listening to them. I spend a lot of time really trying to get into what people think. I love the study of social sciences, behavioral psychology are things that I really am interested in. But I do like a lot of alone time. And I'm not a big sociable creature. So we really are not thrashing the introvert, but what we're talking about is in the context of public speaking, which is an extrovert activity, and introverts generally, not always, but generally really struggle when it comes to public speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we're giving this tip. So put in your picture the most extroverted person you can think of and model that. A perfect example of that would be my daughter. She would be the first one to admit. And that my daughter Candace, when she was going through school, was so painfully shy. It was actually debilitating. And she said, Mom, if I had to present a speech, she said, the paper was shaking so much, it sounded like I was flapping it. And I could actually visualize her in front of the class going, flap, 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 flap with her papers. And she had to learn her speech because the paper would make such a noise. And she said, Mom, my teeth would start to chatter. And she was really, she would rather get sick. In fact, she'd often make herself sick rather than speak in front of the class.
But see, that's how strong the brain is.
That's what I was going to talk about next is one of the reasons why I think I'm doing what I'm doing today is because of my daughter and my son and how I watched them struggle with this through their lives. My son will never admit that, of course, but not a million years. He actually, and he's quite right, it's not that he's shy, he's just... So he said to me once, I'm not shy, I'm quiet, and he likes to listen. And that's perfectly fine. Candace was shy and still struggles with it, but she's learned to model confidence.
Mm-hmm.
So getting back to our points, I don't want to get off point here, mm-hmm. is that we mentioned the first one about acting confident and adopting power poses. So getting yourself into a strong position. When you take the stage as well, walk onto that stage with confidence. Confident walk is big steps, shoulders back, head held up, smile on your face.
And the way to help with that and some tips you can try is do a not confident walk. Show what it is not to be confident. And immediately, you know how to do that. You know that you curl yourself in, your shoulders are slouched, you're walking around, you're looking down, you're awkward and shy. Do the opposite now. Do a confident power walk and feel the difference. Notice the differences when you take on each different movement. Try both. Try walking very into yourself, very shy, awkward, not confident, and then try a confidence walk. See how the mood changes for you.
And the thing I want to mention is that when we ask people to do these power poses and power walks, they say to me, I feel silly. And my response to that, and I'm private coaching people, is actually, you look silly doing what you're doing right now.
Yeah, that's true.
Because, and then I show them videos, and I say, right, how does this look to you? And they will always say, a confident walk. They'll say, that looks good. And I say, well, that's what I mean. So, and if you watch somebody trying to hunch their head into their, like a tortoise, into their collar, and the people who are shy and nervous and self-absorbed, self-conscious, are the ones that become awkward and gawky. And we see that with our kids all the time as well. And by the way, imagination can be a very good thing, but it can be a very bad thing. Because imagination, when it comes to fear, expands and blows things up like a huge microscope.
Sorry.
And so that a little thing appears to be huge. And that's where you have to stop the runaway train. Okay, getting on to the second point. So the first point we looked at was really the power poses or the acting confident, taking a confident pose. And you can do that before you get up to speak. Also, when you're preparing your speech, because as you're thinking about the speech, your mind is going to be going through and your stomach's going to be churning. Don't allow yourself to dwell on the negative images. What you need to do is to take the confident walk around your home, be speaking your lines out, be positive, be strong. Visualize success. Now, we've spoken in a previous show about the fact that in the float, don't swim, is that when you feel anxiety, don't try and resist it, because whatever you resist persists and grows. And so when I say focus on something else, it's pretty much the imagery of, if I have to say to you and hold up a pen in front of you and say, do not think of this pen, what are you thinking about?
The pen.
You're thinking about the pen. So it's not a case of doing that. What it is a case of is, so if I have to just put the pen down, acknowledge that it's there, not fight against it, say, okay, the pen's there. So what? Now I'm going to put my focus on the light bulb, because maybe that's what I'm trying to focus on. And that's really what we're talking about here. The visualization of success is one of the most powerful tools in your toolkit. And it's very important that you, and also if you, sorry, Desiree wanted to no. Okay, so the visualization of success, Desiree was trying to do hand signals for me, which I clearly failed to understand what they meant. And so, yes, we're going to get into this. She was giving me a cue that we need to get into breathing. But before breathing, we actually have the visualizing success. And sports trainers use this a lot with their sportsmen and women to visualize yourself getting on stage and naming it. Oh. Imagine the audience applauding and imagine yourself. So it's a segue really from what the last pointing, acting confident, then see yourself. This is an advanced exercise. And then that's moving into, we've been talking about this for weeks and how breathing can help you relax. And, you know, I find a lot of my clients get annoyed with this because, and I did myself actually, when people seem to think that breathing is the cure for everything. But it's not just breathing, folks. It's a particular kind of breathing. And do you find, for example, have you found that breathing through things has helped you?
Absolutely. Any type of stress. It's just because I think it gives you a moment to focus on something else, not whatever you're stressed out about. It's taking a moment just to breathe, and then you're focusing on something that automatically starts to relax you, starts to calm your heart rate down. It's mindfulness, but also it's just taking a second to remembering to breathe, because when you're stressed out, what's the last thing you're doing is you're taking shorter breaths, your anxiety starts to rise, your heart's racing, and you're not getting the proper blood flow. And so making sure that
the oxygen
to the brain, absolutely. And so it's taking that time to breathe.
There's a technique called the 7-11 breathing method, which is extremely valuable for public speaking. And this has actually been scientifically proven. People have been attached to monitors. If they, no matter how stressed they are, if they do this breathing exercise, the 7-11 breathing exercise, their heart rate will slow down, their anxiety will calm. And so if you can trust me with this and just listen to the exercises, every time you start to feel stressed and anxious, get to a quiet place. Music for me is a huge help. If you turn on soft, gentle music, it's also been proven to help. Put on some lovely classical music or whatever music calms you down. Put on a quiet. First, start the exercise by just being aware of your breathing. Try to relax your body. And when I say relax, again, it goes to don't force it to relax, let it relax. Just focus on every area of your body and consciously let it go. Focus on your breathing and just think about how wonderful it is that you are breathing in and out. And feel the air moving through your nostrils and out through your mouth. This is how the 7-11 exercise starts. It's breathing in through the nose, out through the mouth. And then it begins. At a certain point, you breathe into the count of seven, and we're talking about a fast seven. We're not talking about one, two, because there's a limit to how much you can breathe in. Mm. It's a one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, breathing in, and then breathing out to the count of 11, and that's pretty hard. So you're going out, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11. And breathe through your mouth. Mm. I often tell people to make your mouth the shape of a straw, and imagine that you're blowing through the straw. You're not just going, but you're, sorry, I just about coughed it, is that you breathe through the straw with a thin air, but also, and controlled. And then breathe in again, two, three, four, five, six, seven, and breathe out, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11. If you do that for a minute or two, there's no way you can be stressed. And try this for anything, whatever you're feeling. If you get anxious in traffic, you get frustrated at work, whatever it is, take some time out and breathe like this.
And the more you practice breathing, the better you become, believe it or not. And it's funny because why should we practice breathing? We're practicing every day. But it's practicing this kind of technique, taking your time and focusing on your breathing, because when you get up there to speak, we've heard so many speakers who do not know how to breathe properly, and then they get up there and they sound very breathy, and it sounds like they're running out of breath because their nervousness is overcoming them, and they start having some anxiety, and you can hear it in their voice and even in their nose, especially when they have a microphone on. So just be very careful, because if you're practicing your breathing, when you're up on stage, it's no different. Take your time to breathe and just take pauses, and it will help you flow in your speeches as well, because you're taking the time to focus on your breathing. And I know that sounds a little bit too much when you have to memorize your speech. You have to be in front of an audience, and there's this, this, and this, and you're trying to connect with them. There's so many factors involved. But if you can focus on your breathing as well and just get the practice, eventually it'll be easy. When we get to voice and how to breathe properly as well,
I think once you focus advanced on your breathing prior to speaking, it almost comes naturally when you are speaking.
Exactly, exactly.
Here's another thing I want to say to you. While you are speaking, a lot of people get what I call clicky voice. And that's when the saliva glands dry up and it's a sign of nervousness and their voice begins to click. And it's a very whenever I hear this from a professional speaker, it's actually very much a put-off for me, because I find myself focusing on the clickiness and wishing they would take a sip of water. Just keep on thinking, take a sip of water. There is really nothing wrong, folks, with taking water up with you if it's not supplied. Stopping at a point, taking a sip. I have seen many professional speakers take a sip of water.
Nothing wrong with it.
Nothing wrong with it. Careful how you slurp into the microphone if you have a lavalier on. So be careful you don't go. Reminds me of that very famous story about, and I don't know, it's now become an urban legend, but I told my kids this last week and they thought it was hilarious about the public speaker who had an upset stomach
and was on stage and called for a break and said, we're now going to be breaking for 5 minutes because she had to dash to the bathroom.
Oh, man.
And so she dashed off to the bathroom where she spent the 5 minutes in excruciating agony and obviously making all sorts of horrible noises, only to realize that she hadn't turned to a lavalier.
No! Also.
And so the entire auditorium had heard all these noises.
Okay, I'm sorry. That's something where I will not be able to get up and speak again. I think that's one of those moments where that fear would just, that embarrassment.
I know, we're actually cringing and blushing and thinking about
cringing.
It.
Cringing. Oh, I can only imagine this poor woman, too. Oh.
So I guess the wisdom in that is turn your lavalier off, make sure that's not the case. And also, if you're feeling embarrassed or stressed, then maybe you should think about that poor woman and have a good laugh, and you can get over yourself, because nothing you do can be as bad as that. It really can't be.
Unless you do that. Then that'd be
unless you do that.
Unless
you do
it.
You won't do that. No, we've given that advice.
Yeah, we're giving you the advice. You won't have
somebody else
issue.
Told me, sent me a message. See, I've been getting quite a few messages about the question I asked in the first week about what do you fear. And a man sent me a message. I won't mention his name because he's obviously asked me not to. And he told me that he projectile vomited from the stage. And so, and on top of it, he said that the MC, who was a very, very important government person, had introduced him and was now walking past the front of the stage, and he projectile
onto him,
over him, but obviously spattered him as well. So he said it was...
Okay, I'm sorry. That's probably... Okay, I love these stories. We should just get them all out. Yes. We need to hear more of these.
Well, the problem with this was he said he actually was feeling ill from that morning, but, you know, he could not cancel it. It was a big, big event.
But why did the vomit decide to come up right at that moment?
Well, he said he was feeling ill the whole time, and he said he was holding it in.
Oh,
and he really should have probably canceled that event, but he couldn't. It was just a huge event. Can't really mention it without giving too much away. But when he took the lectern, he
all
said
of a sudden,
this overwhelming... Oh, he took a sip of water to calm it down, and he said that actually
made
it worse.
Ugh.
So, folks, there are horrible stories like that. But you know what? He's still alive. He recovered. He got over it, and he's actually telling the story.
I was going to say, now you can make a joke of it yourself. And that shows the power of being a great speaker, is being able to make fun of yourself. And I do now. I do too as well, even with my crying episode, where for 5 minutes everyone in the audience is waiting for me to stop crying and get it together and finish my speech. And here I am waiting for someone to say, oh, it's okay, you don't have to finish. And that's probably, it was very embarrassing too. Now, I didn't vomit everywhere, but I might as well have, because everyone was just staring at me crying from the front of the room, probably feeling so bad.
You know, if you really think about the worst thing that could happen, one of my kids mentioned this as a fear, in that they said they're afraid they're going to sneeze and there's going to be snot everywhere.
Oh!
And
they can't blow their nose.
I know. I'm sorry that we're talking about this disgusting stuff, but can you imagine? That came out of a child. And I've got to tell you, it wasn't said in joke. They weren't sitting there laughing. This is very serious. This is little Matthew, and you know who little Matthew is. He suffers from allergies.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was afraid that he's going to sneeze and...
going to spray on everyone.
So the answer I had to this, and we've got a slightly longer show today, folks, because it is a holiday. So I set the show for 45 minutes, just so that you know. And you can stick around with us. If you want to go right now and you just want to stick to the half an hour, you've basically got your 3 points. We've got striking the power pose. Second one is visualization. I'm going to get a little bit more into visualization in a second. And then the 7-11 breathing. So those are your 3 points. Goodbye. Get on with your day.
Sorry, challenge. Yeah, practice your breathing, though, guys, because then it becomes more natural when you're speaking. Even if you're speaking one-on-one to someone, whatever it is, practicing your breathing helps you become a better speaker, and we'll get into that when we get to voice in future episodes.
But we're going
to
chat a little bit longer today, because I wanted to just elaborate a little bit more on one or two of the points. Getting back to Matthew. So here's Matthew with a allergy problem, and you know who Matthew is. He is the cutest kid. I mean, he's just a huge brain in an awkward body. And he's Asian, not that that should make any difference, but I'm trying to get you to visualize him. He's Asian because he has got a rather large head. He's got a big, thick-rimmed glasses on. Both his parents are medical doctors, surgeons, and he's destined definitely for the medical field. He is very intelligent, and he's actually a really great communicator, but his body's awkward and gangly. And, you know, when I first met him, it was almost as if
you know what Ken Robinson says, where his body was literally just the transport meme for the head. That was Matthew.
Mm.
But when he said this to me very seriously, with his eyes open big behind those big glasses, he said, "I'm afraid." I said, "What are you afraid of?" to all the kids. And they came up with genuine, legitimate things. And when he said, "I'm afraid I'm going to sneeze and get snot all over," I wanted to laugh. I had this insane, now I had in my own head was saying, "Don't laugh," because I have to take these things seriously. And this was the one occasion I couldn't help myself because I just burst out. And all the class started laughing as well, which was typical on cue. And he, of course, I mean, this is a serious concern for him. And I had to say, "I'm sorry, Matthew, don't mean to laugh. That is, I understand, that must be a big
issue, yeah.
Issue. That's a big deal. I would also be afraid of, you know." But
you
I said,
know,
"Let's,
everyone,
let's
yeah.
look at what we can do to prevent that from happening." And I've got to tell you, kids thought it was very funny when I said that they could bring a hanky. I didn't know that that wasn't a term here. What do you know what a hanky
is? Yes, it's the cloth tissue. It's a cloth tissue.
Well, even a
just regular tissue.
Even a tissue hanky.
Yes.
It's just a stronger one, you know.
It's a strong one.
Because
I guess it's just not a common thing because people say tissue here or
okay.
Kleenex.
Well, the reason why I say this is because I actually do have experience with a young boy. I'll never forget this. When I was growing up at school, during what we call assembly, and I guess you might call it that as well, they had a bunch of kids on the stage. I guess it was a chorus or something. I don't remember exactly the circumstances, but I remember the boy very well because he was also an awkward boy and quite often teased by other kids. And I think back on it right now, he was prime fodder for bullying.
Mm.
And yet I think, you know, he was very smart and he was just a little bit thinner and, you know, kind of a sickly looking, and he had this sort of hooked nose. But the scene I remember very well, because I'm sitting in the audience, and he takes out his tissue, not hanky, tissue, began to blow his nose, which for starters drew everybody's attention, because it was this big hooting noise. And so everybody's looking at him. And then to our distress, what had actually happened was that he obviously didn't have tissue in the important part, because as he's blowing, there's just this line of snot pouring down.
Oh, that's
nose.
So gross.
And it was just so distressing, and everybody started laughing. And so when Matthew said this statement to me, I thought about that visual as well. And I thought, gosh, it is a very real fear. And so we discussed the strategy. And that, folks, is what we were talking about last week. It's saying, okay, what might I do to prevent that from happening? So if I'm going to sneeze, nothing I can do to stop it. Sneeze also comes on very fast. And so in his case, for example, if he was speaking behind a lectern, where might he put a hanky or a strong Kleenex that if he had to sneeze, he can sneeze into that and not have that situation happen?
Mm.
Now, I know this sounds silly, but this is what I mean about strategies. Face your fears. Say, okay, if that does happen.
And have a plan.
What
and
am
that'll
I going to do?
And then you know exactly how to answer that, so you're not up there freaking out. You have an answer for it right away. And that's always being prepared is very important.
Yeah.
For overcoming that confidence. And same thing for him. Let's put a tissue into our pocket and just have it in case something happens. Or even if you have a lectern, a podium, someplace that you can store a water bottle, some tissue, some emergency stuff there, whatever it is that you need. If you have a cough, for example, as much as you shouldn't do this when you're speaking, but if you have a really bad cough, having a mint or what is it called, a cough drop of some kind, and then while you're speaking, you can take it out just to soothe your throat out for a second. A sip of water can also
help
with that.
We got some advice from a professional singer who, because as you know, for the last number of months, I've really been struggling with a cough. I had bronchitis that just would not go away. And at one point, pneumonia. And you can still hear in the show occasionally in the morning, I still have, my chest really took a beating. She gave a great tip, and the tip was to take a cough drop and to put it between two suckers, but then to put it between your cheek and your teeth while you're talking. And she said, you can't cough. Now, I didn't believe her when she said this, but you can't cough while you do this. Now, the reason I don't have one in my mouth right now is that you'd be hearing it rattling next to my teeth, because I did try that and I found it difficult to talk. But actually, it was kind of valuable. It was a valuable tip for me. It really was, because I was able to do that then perhaps on the way to a speaking engagement.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time I got there, the cough had calmed down.
Okay, so I said I wanted to just speak a little bit more about visualization. And to me, visualization is absolutely key. Because the reason that you're anxious and nervous is because you're visualizing the worst case scenario. And that is normal. So folks, first of all, welcome to the human race. That is very normal. It is programmed into your brain to examine worst case scenario. And there is a reason for that. You need to be prepared. And what's very interesting is I recently read an article where they were talking about for our entire lives, and I think with people like Earl Nightingale and Dale Carnegie, originally the people who came up with the power of positive thinking, is we have really been taught that we need to be positive.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be positive. We have to think positively. We cannot have a negative thought. And recent research is actually showing then the secret comes out, right? And you're supposed to sit there and visualize what you want.
Mm-hmm.
But recent research is actually showing that a lot of that is actually programming as a failure. Because you become so positive, or you visualize positive stuff, that you don't act, and when things do go wrong, as they do, you're not equipped to handle it. So it turns out that our bodies are actually programmed this way purposely. So I think there has to be a balance. And what we need to do is that it can be a very positive thing for us to allow our mind to go to the place that we fear and say, okay, so I fear that, and then use the float method. But here is another method that I have found extremely valuable. It's used in neuro-linguistic programming a lot, and I've used it throughout my life. If you're a good visual thinker, and I say this, when I say this, some people cannot think in visuals, in which case, they might be more auditory. They may they just may think differently. Use whatever form of thinking works for you. If there's a strong emotion attached to it, it works better. So what you do is step number one, you go to the fear. So whatever your mind's wanting to fear, let it go there. Don't fight it.
Don't try and think positive thoughts because it's not going to work.
Let it go there. And think, all right, so I'm going to get on the stage and everyone's going to be laughing at me. Let's say that's your fear. Get on the stage in your mind. See everybody laughing at you. See that picture strongly. Freeze frame it. Look at it. Then deliberately switch to an alternate picture. So it's almost as if you've shrunk that picture and imagine you can actually shrink it up into the corner like you could do in a television with a small picture there. And then a bigger picture of yourself standing in front of the audience and the audience looking up at you with appreciation, applauding, laughing in the right spaces to see the positive picture. And if you want to get that visual into your head and you're having some difficulty doing that, watch some of the TED Talks videos where you can see the audience really responding to the speaker. Get a visual from that. So fix that visual in your mind. Now what you've done is you're focusing on the bigger picture. Once again, shrink the big picture into the corner and bring the fear out again. That's called swooshing. So after a period of time, you go swoosh, and then your mind, you open the fear again. Look at the picture of the fear, examine it, but now you're observing it rather than being in it. Don't magnify it. Don't make it worse. The likelihood of people actually laughing at you is almost null. They're going to be laughing at you if you're making a joke, but beyond that, most people want you to succeed. So look at it as an observer would. Maybe even see yourself laughing as well. Now, swoosh, make it small again. Bring the big picture, the successful picture into your mind. Look up on the internet the swoosh technique. Examine this and try it out for yourself. If it works, let me know. If you send me some, it works for me. It really, really works for me. Some people have said it doesn't work as well for them. It really depends on the way you operate. We're going to be discussing next week a couple more techniques that you can use. And we're going to do something that I don't know has been done on air before on a show like this. And that is that I thought we could try a 5-minute meditation.
Cool.
So a lot of people actually who come to me for coaching, I take them through a visual meditation. And this is not some hokey pokey new age thing. What I do is I take them through a guided meditation. I'm going to test out whether I can use music. and I will speak you through a scenario. So next week, Monday at 7:30, if you can find 7:30 in the morning, Pacific Standard Time, if you can find a moment to relax and sit in a comfy chair or even lie in your bed with your headphones on, dial into the show because I'm going to be doing something and I will be programming into your mind a meme or a thought or an idea which will help you relax and to be a better public speaker. And I believe that if you listen to this, it will change your anxiety. Well, it will remove your anxiety. You will feel confident. And I believe that that's going to happen. So if you listen in next week, Monday, and if you can't listen in, you can download the podcast of our show. Go to iTunes, type in CAP Talk, CAPTALK, and download the episode, or you can go directly to the link that we provide on Facebook every week and listen in yourself. And we will be doing that meditation next week. I will be getting Desiree to relax here, and I'll be focusing my attention on Desiree, but all of you can be relaxing at the same time. Once again, please send me any quips, notes, thoughts. You can email directly at info@shantinibben.com. But most of you, it seems, are sending me messages via Facebook. So carry on doing that as well via the Facebook message page if you're my Facebook friend. By the way, follow me on Twitter. I've never really paid attention to Twitter, but follow me on Twitter as well because I do plan to be giving extra tips on Twitter.
Mm.
And then watch out for our blogs as well.
Absolutely. Look out for those blogs and the...
And then mention tomorrow night.
All right. If you are in the Los Angeles area, make sure that you come check out our Captivating Toastmasters meeting. Shanti will be doing her special training on the secrets to being a captivating speaker, and it's something you're not going to want to miss. So we are having it in Woodland Hills at the Hilton Hotel, located on Canoga and Victory Boulevard, at 7 p.m. That is tomorrow, January 20th, at 7 p.m. at the Hilton Hotel in Woodland Hills. We would love to have any of you as our guests, so please shoot us either a message, as Shanti said, via Facebook, or to our email address, which is info@shantinibben.com. Shanti and I will both receive that email, and we look forward to having you all there. And once again, thank you all for joining us for another episode.
I just want to mention
more thing.
There has actually been a caller on the air for the last 16 minutes.
Oh.
So I do apologize to that caller. If you'd like to call in and you actually would like to speak on the show, because we do have a little bit of a strange phenomenon here that some people call in to listen in and actually have no intention of coming onto the show. And I don't know how to differentiate whether you are calling in to listen in and or you're calling in to speak on the show. I think sometimes what happens is that people push the wrong button. Instead of pushing the button to tune in and listen, they push the button to actually get onto the show. So if you really do want to get onto the show, it might be a good idea to actually either text Desiree, because you always pick up your text.
Yes.
Message one of us on Facebook, but text Desiree on 818-312-7515. That's 818-312-7515. And let us know. And the caller, if you did want to speak on the show, we do apologize that we missed you this time. Let me know by email, and we will make sure that you get some airtime next week, after the meditation, of course. So thank you, everybody, for joining us today. We've had a little bit of a longer show, but we got our points through in the first half an hour. And, in fact, we may, in future, we'll have our half an hour show and then perhaps just do a little bit of extra talk afterwards, because we found it really difficult to, not to get the points out. There's only 3 points that we have per show. But part of the reason we're having this show is also to have a relaxed chat over coffee and for us to enjoy ourselves chatting. And if you happen to enjoy that, that's great. If you don't, you can tune out.
Tune out.
Yes. Okay. With
perfect.
That,
with
we're
that,
going
everyone,
to play our usual greeting and goodbye, which is
stay captivating.
Hey.
Hey.